Welcome back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined for the balance of this half hour by Professor John Hall of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He is a professor of military history and the Ambrose Heseltine Professor of U.S. Military History, to be specific. John, thanks so much for sticking around with us. Help me understand, and all of us to understand, in context, how unusual or not these multiple deployments of National Guard to various, frankly, Democratic-leaning large cities is. And what role, if any, military, including National Guard or regular active duty troops, have under our constitutional structure in civilian law enforcement? Put this in context for us.
Yeah, I mean, this is very unusual in modern times. In recent history, you haven't really seen much like this. And the fact that the president has said rather explicitly that one of his motivations for doing this is overtly political. He sees this as damaging Democratic mayors and governors and thinks that it redounds to his credit as being tough on crime, and it thinks it plays to his base, which is why you're only seeing these deployments to cities that are governed by Democratic politicians, irrespective of the crime rates there vis-a-vis other cities. One of the ironic things is one of the reasons we have a constitution, though, is because under the Articles of Confederation, the founders discovered that they didn't actually have the means to respond to civil disturbances with military force if they needed to. Right after the Revolution, Shays' Rebellion in 1786 was this shocking moment in which it looked like they just won their independence and they can't overcome a simple farmer rebellion. And that's one of the reasons why they actually had a constitutional convention, was because they recognized they needed a stronger central government. And as early as 1792, Congress passed the first of what would become cumulatively known as the Insurrection Acts, again, because it was a fragile young nation, and they could not afford to let it be toppled from within by domestic acts of disobedience. And Washington used that law in 1794 to put down what's known as the Whiskey Rebellion. So the Constitution actually does authorize the use of military to put down domestic combinations, was a word they used a lot back then. But the bar historically has been higher than this. I mean, this is where much of the debate lies, is what going on tantamount to a rebellion, an insurrection, an invasion. The president purposefully uses all of those words because that provides the legal, he hopes, for these deployments. But ultimately, it's going to be up to the courts to determine whether or not it meets that burden.
What do you make of the fact that we, right now, as you and I sit here and discuss this, we've got a circuit split. We've got the Ninth Circuit that is permitting, at least on a temporary basis, deployments of National Guard based on Trump's basically unilateral blanket assertion that there are rebellions. And the Seventh Circuit has said no, that they're just, the facts don't make out a rebellion, that protest, even protest that includes incidental acts of violence, even if there's some coordination, unless its purpose is to topple the government, it ain't a rebellion. What do you make of this weird, bizarre legal moment that we're in, where there's different rules that are being applied in Illinois versus California and Oregon at the moment?
Yeah, well, I think you're far better qualified to answer that question than I am, as I'm a simple military historian rather than a legal scholar. But I mean, I do think it reflects a divided opinion about the amount of authority that is inherent in the office of the commander in chief. And historically, a great many judges have deferred to a more liberal view, although that's an interesting choice of words, I recognize, a more expansive view. More expansive view with presidential prerogative to make these determinations. The benefit of the doubt, devolves.
Has inured in the past to the federal government, to the president making those assertions. It's fascinating to me when you parse the language in these decisions as well as the lower court decisions. you see some courts expressing skepticism from a military, historical military perspective. If the executive engages in outright falsehoods as a factual pretext for military action, what roles do either frontline, you know, service members or top level leaders have in the military to raise an objection? Like, how does that work? And I'm sorry to ask you this question, sir, with just a smidge over a minute left. Do your best if you can. Yeah, I'd love to have you back.
Very quickly. I mean, I think you saw the best way that they should do this during the George Floyd protests in 2020, when senior military leaders effectively dissuaded the Trump administration from deploying active duty troops to Washington, D.C. But the president resented that, right? That's part of what I've mentioned earlier, sort of 4 years to plot a new way as he came back in. And so at present, the military commanders are going to have to do whatever the courts adjudge in these circumstances. But it may come to a point in which they are going to have to make a decision between what the law says, because the legal standard is that manifestly illegal orders, they should not disobey. But what about their ethics? And some of them, I think, are already running up against ethical barriers.
Folks, that is Professor John Hall, Professor of Military History, the Ambrose Heseltine Professor from University of Wisconsin-Madison. John, I'd love to have you come back soon, because this ain't going nowhere fast. These are the big questions for our constitutional republic. My thanks to you, sir. When we come back on the other side, I'm going to continue to dig in to the corruption, these questions about what's going to happen in Gaza. Has there always been a long-term plan for Jared Kushner to basically build hotels there? And to whose benefit exactly? We discuss next. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn, and you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.